I'm Dr. Amalia Gonyas-Malka. Welcome to Womanity, Woman in Unity, the show that celebrates prominent and ordinary African women's milestone achievements in their struggles for liberation, self-emancipation, human rights, democracy, racism, socioeconomic class division, and gender-based violence. Joining us on the line today is Ms. Rosemary Zuleka Kapa, who is a Member of Parliament and currently serving as the Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development. Welcome to the show, Chair.
Oh, thank you very much. Welcome. And also, thank you very much to your listeners.
It's a pleasure to have you on the air. Can you please tell us a little bit more about the Portfolio Committee that you are heading up?
Thank you very much. The portfolio committee I'm heading, I must say, is very challenging. It's a portfolio committee amongst many, many other committees, as South African Parliament is really dependent on the committee system for it to move and then go to national, go to all levels and reach our people. It's a people's parliament and an activist parliament. And therefore, that portfolio committee is open when it's sitting to all members to come and be observers without necessarily participating as they are non-members. What is it about? The Portfolio Committee on Social Development is established because there is still so much poverty amongst our people. Inequality is really very, very obvious. There are those people who live in rural areas and also deep rural areas, which is somehow characterized by being a developing world. Others live in the peri-urban of the cities, and are also in informal settlements. And poverty there is also very grinding. And also there's congestion and there's also inequality. And therefore you have the cities of South Africa, the cities of the first world. It's very nice to live there if you can afford. And therefore the committee accommodates all various needs from those that are health related. So there are vulnerable groups, as I have indicated, that you will have women and children and people with disabilities living under these conditions, which I have already mentioned. But peri-urban and rural and deep rural are areas where you really starting to have proper accommodation, housing. You also have no water, no roads. In fact, it's very clearly no infrastructure. And to access any government service delivery, you are completely inaccessible. But also they will always you are inaccessible, yet it's them as government that is inaccessible. We also deal with the service delivery items where you millennium goals, which are now sustainable development goals, which we as a portfolio committee coordinate so that we can then give to relevant departments so that they can respond to those, specifically women. Women, even in an urban, they find themselves excluded or marginalized in one way or another. Industries, there are very few. Employment, women of color really, really find it that because they have been marginalized, because they have not have been exposed to better education. So there are many things that they find that they are always below the level. I've mentioned the poverty and all what actually is associated with that. So the portfolio committee stands for those. We receive budget, we deal with specific items like poverty alleviation, but we do come with a very important program comprehensive social security, and we have been able to work with other portfolio committees in Parliament, and today we have minimum wage having been signed by the South African government, which means it will then set a basis for if women enter industry or employment services, they will be able to have a start that is, they know if I am working for PEP, for ShopRite, for wherever I'm working for another person, I do have a claim that there will be a minimum wage equal to others. We also have a lot of work that we do provide food for the needy. That is, we do run programs like food security. We support women in rural economy, entering there through cooperatives or individuals using their smaller nyana land they have. Of course, we've got a big voice in talking to rural development and land reforms that women are getting. We do have women, indeed, that's a positive one, that have won national awards on being the best farmer who exports, the best farmer at a very low level, etc. We also have an opportunity to actually identify whether women are entering the areas of science and technology and engineering. They are doing very, very well. And there are many NGOs on that arena that are able to focus and recruit the girl child and so on. But on top of all that, the minister has been championing the issue that relates to sanitary pads, because they have seemed to be very expensive and also cause our young women not to be able to attend school on certain days and in fact their dignity and confidence. Many areas of such sensitivity. On issues of women being displaced when they are old, they are thought to be, this is very rife in rural areas where you can be associated with something, witchcraft, and then you are killed or you are displaced. We're very vocal and working with many NGOs on that arena. Forced marriages, we have been visibly setting up infrastructure where those women who leave school earlier because they were forced in marriage and they are not willing to leave, then they are assisted to be empowered so that they themselves can lift them out of that poverty. We also really go a long way and very radically on the issue of early childhood development, which we think will curb the failure rate and inability to be able to learn, especially at the foundation level. There are many things that we do,
It sounds like an incredibly diverse portfolio and one which really seeks to look after the needs of people and not neglecting anybody, really penetrating deep down into rural and deep rural areas to alleviate poverty, to help reduce the inequalities that we have in societies, particularly with our vulnerable groups, really relating to women, children, and people with disabilities. And the moves that you have within the service delivery and adhering to our almost national or international instruments like the Sustainable Development Goals. And you particularly ironed out goal number 5, which is about reducing the inequalities for women to seek empowerment, and goal number 4, which speaks about our needs for education. Mrs. Kapa, can you tell us, does Africa feature in the Portfolio Committee's strategic plans? For instance, do you have alliances with other countries in the continent who to focus on social development?
Yes, we do have, ma'am. For example, last week I was in Uganda to represent the South African Parliament on a reporting on the SDGs. And this was a sub-Saharan parliamentary forum. But at the same time, the Parliament itself has this peer review group in Africa where such a niche as development goals, care for women, women's health, and dilapidating diseases like your sugar diabetes, your TB, as well as HIV. But we do really, in South Africa, of late, many countries come in. Hence, I am sure you have seen a very bad situations of a xenophobic type of attacks. Though it's when you look at it closer, you are able to identify that the poor South Africans are competing with those who come from Africa and any other area who also settle in these congested areas because they themselves can't afford the urban, the city life. And then the access to resources and employment become a very tight and therefore tensions arise. So I want to say, those women, many African countries that are here, they are more organized than South Africans because they, when they're here, they are here, they are able to have leaders or someone called an Angolan convener, a Tanzanian convener, and they are able, therefore, to have a database and they are able to work with us. For example, you will have people in the accommodated like Lindela, where they are there to be sorted out. Whether that's also our role in that particular home affairs institution or agency, where you are kept so that we know that we are applying for permanent citizenship, you are applying for a refugee status, you are going to come for medical situations, etc. So we do have those. Although I am not now in a position to say to you which ones exactly, but also not us only helping as South Africans. We also have very international organizations that donate, say, blankets, donate food for the needy. So we are the committee that where the minister gets those. And I must also say, our role as a portfolio committee is not necessarily to implement, but to oversight and collaborate with the department to ensure that what they get gets where it is going. And also, this department is them who actually have direct link with these NGOs. But we are there to facilitate that operation, that collaboration, and also to oversight and to make department to account.
So the portfolio committee plays an integrating role, connecting and coordinating components that need to happen, as well as the strategic perspective and governance to ensure that Parliament does what it's supposed to be doing. Today, we're talking to Ms. Rosemary Kapper, who is a Member of Parliament and currently serving as Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development. Ms. Kapper, you mentioned that women were formed part of the vulnerable group. And as this program is all about gender equality, which is increasingly a global focus, I want to ask you, what are your perspectives of women's empowerment and gender equality legislation?
I think what needs to be done, I think the policies that we have, even in Africa, they are not, even where I went, there were really women representatives and in the parliament who represented these sub-Saharan parliaments. And one time when I was a member of parliament, as far back as 1995, I was the chair of the then Foreign Affairs, which is today International Relations and Cooperation. Many African countries would really, it would be fight for them to be represented, to have a mixed representation in everything they attended. But to date, when I went there, currently, as I said, last week, there were actually a good representation. Really, you would see men and women as parliamentarians representing our parliaments in this SDG drive in the sub-Saharan. But at the same time, I do think we've tried to break through and make inroads, seeing that you still also have a huge share being Mama Nkosazana Zuma, and working fairly well with the countries there and male leadership of states. And that therefore, that makes me to think we are making inroads. Being a parliamentarian, being a minister, is not about being developmental in nature.
Ms. Kapasi, you've certainly witnessed a big change towards gender progression since the time that you started your political career, given the examples that you've just cited. Can you share with us some of the gender challenges which you experienced and that you managed to overcome?
Oh, yes, ma'am. That is the sad story of my life, because I was born of a chief. My father is the chief of the Pondo clan, Amafago. And then these are conservative communities. Even when we have our democracy today, at a very high level, I want to assure your listeners that we have still a lot of work to make inroads in rural areas. That's where I come from. Eastern Cape, in OR Tambo district, in the deepest rural areas of Pondoland. It is still very difficult for women. It was still difficult, more difficult for me, because if you are born of a royal family, you have to make relations with other royal family members in order to spread and strengthen that particular royal. And schooling, it was not the thing. And I think if conditions were not that bad, I could have done better in my education, because I only went to school because there were none as well at the age of 12 to do my, what would say day to day, grade R, sub A. And struggling to, there was no better education. And we also, at some stage, experience the fact of being a homeland, which further institutionalized traditional leadership. Really, traditional leadership, we will have to work hard to break through for gender equality, because even when growing, the young man is looked upon by a person who must have a status, and the young woman is seen as somebody who must be orientated towards a household and towards a respecting in-laws, and really being submissive in a way. I must say that. So I've gone through that process, and the hard work, the household chores.
I have to ask you, Ms. Kapa, you've said that you've gone through it. How did you manage to overcome it? Because those are all incredibly strong cultural components which are almost aimed to keep women subservient and submissive. But yet you've managed to overcome it. You've managed to succeed. So what did you do?
When I went to school, my learning really, really was, I could participate to an extent that my parents felt I needed to go to a boarding school, which was Mfundisweni's school, high school. And after that, I was able to be, the missionaries were not that, were good, because that was also a mission school. You know, this matter of mission schools having to discipline, to teach, to orientate you and rebuild the type of a person you would be, and to be orientated towards leadership. And then I really was in leadership structure to being a head prefect at some stage, and then learning how to defend the weak, and also how to stand for our rights in that college. I went through, therefore, to the universities, and being a professional, a nurse, and with midwifery, more exposure made me to feel this, it doesn't end here. Today you can go to maternity ward, assist a woman, get a very, very beautiful little thing with black and white eyes, soft skin, so, so tender. 1 week later, she comes back dehydrated. Can't recognize the same one that I assisted to be born. And I said, therefore, let me gather all the courage and go and join those who are fighting for a better cause, especially for women. You know, when you can go to deep rural area to conduct, to deliver a baby there, and you have to use a sledge, you have to do everything to ensure that you have a drip running, women bleeding. So all those experiences showed me that it doesn't end here. It's not about me. I must gather all strength. I must defy any other bondage that seeks to reduce my desire to assist others. Hence, therefore, today I comfortably sit in any forum without fear, and also can address anyone as long as I'm within the law, and as long as I employ all the respect and discipline that was instilled by missionaries sometime and the other community members, therefore, who supported the struggle for women education, and I appreciate those. And also good example of our school teachers. They were really not teachers. They were parents. They would really want to mold a leader out of you. And they would take time outside school. They would also talk to you as an individual and show you which areas you are good at and want to sharpen what you are capable of. And those teachers are still, to me, any type of teachers that were real leaders in the dark.
So education has absolutely been a key player in your life across all spectrums, from not only the knowledge gained, but also the influence of teachers, the missionaries, in terms of shaping you into the person that you are today. Whilst we're on the topic of leadership, building female leadership is important not just for the future of our country, but for the continent at large. And as a role model to many South African women, and indeed across the continent, how do you see leadership in South Africa?
There is leadership in South Africa, but I think also there is a gap between the political space and the general populace around the issue of leadership. One time I attended a funeral of an evangelical church where there was an elderly woman being buried. The chairperson, because of the role of their church, was a woman, the program director. She has never been to school, but she also wasn't young. But see, the way she was dynamic in knowing how to control what must come in, when do we stop, when do we sing, gave me something that says there's a lot of leadership that requires to be brought into the center stage. At the same time, you look into various churches where you talk of about women's manyano and their issues and how they stand for the gender issues in that space. You also have teachers. I mean, that's why I'm saying those teachers who were women were to an extent a model to us. So there is a lot of leadership that the political space excludes. I think there must be a way of ensuring that when elections, political elections, when political parties are going to be electing, they must not only concentrate on their members, but also include and recruit deliberately capable people who actually are not interested to be a member of a political party, but do everything you can really admire and see that they are for the people. They are doing everything for the people. They are not seeking to be popular. They are also doing so that there must be this change and this democracy must stand and must be sustained. I think the leadership needs to be molded, and I really would appeal to all women representing political parties and who are really politicians to take time to share their views, their ideas with ordinary women in the society, ordinary women in a village. I think there will be more social cohesion and more stability in our society when people know everything. If we have a particular program on SDGs that every child must go to school, attention must be paid to women, young women, so that they are not only doing household chores, but they are given an opportunity, equal time to study and to be equal to their colleagues as young men. So and also participate in sport, which is not really happening in rural areas, because they still have to cook, they still have to fetch water, and boys have to go and play soccer out there or rugby. So I think more effort of identifying and deliberately molding future leadership for Africa, that will help.
Your passion for female leadership and to develop well-rounded young women comes through loud and clear. And I have to ask you now, do you think that South Africa is ready for a woman president?
Indeed, it has been ready for woman president, not only now. I think as we go forward and we see what our ministers can do, because if you look into what women are doing in South Africa, the leadership of women in South Africa, I've said already, are really good. But it depends, therefore, on the arrangement as to how we approach this. And I don't even think we need to say we nominate a woman president, rather than to seek to say we nominate a relevant a person with a leadership that we think is needed now, and not necessarily, because we now, I don't think we're fighting for gender equality now. We are there leading, and therefore we should be stamping our foot and say, can we nominate so and so? That she is a woman is something we know, but not we can really use as an instrument to get this leadership we want. But equally, I'm saying women are equal to the task today in South Africa.
thank you very much for expressing your opinion. Today, we're talking to Ms. Rosemary Kapo, who is a Member of Parliament and currently serving as Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development. You are listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance on frequency 9625 kHz on the 31-meter band, also available on DSTV channel 902. We would love to receive your comments on Twitter at Womanity Talk. Ms. Kapo, we are unfortunately running out of time. Can I ask you, during our conversations and different radio programs with many women who have all made tremendous achievements in their respective fields of expertise, we've asked one constant question, and that is, what are some of the factors that they consider have contributed to their success? Some people speak about hard work, others talk about perseverance. In your opinion, what have been some of the key drivers for your success?
It is really hard work. Although I must say there was nothing that said in my desire, I want to be a leader, I want to push forward. But it was always an issue that I want to deal and with this challenge and defeat it. Not for me as a person, but in the process, I found that each challenge I was able to overcome, it contributed to me being a leader and being known to have defeated that in a particular stage, that forced marriage thing, which was a taboo and something else. And then I ended up automatically being involved in these little fights up to the bigger fights. So I can't really say I woke up and say I want to be a leader. And sometimes even at this leadership level, I don't really feel that I have managed myself. I think the situation and the environment and the area where I automatically found myself enabled me to be who I am today and can be able to speak to people and also to speak with you freely and very much open-minded and relaxed, because this has come to wanting to support someone, wanting to ensure that you get your ID, come what, that this person is going to be buried by government, come what. So this forceful way of assisting others whom you find that, yes, I'm oppressed, but not as so-and-so.
It sounds like each of your life experiences and the different roles that you've had have laid the foundation for the next one. You spoke about having smaller fights, succeeding in them, going into the larger ones. What would you say has had the biggest mark on you, left that most indelible imprint and made you to be the person that you are today?
I would say to my colleagues out there, I would say to the young ones, the fights should indeed not be about you wanting to be on the top of the ladder, but it is always a we that will enable you to swim amongst other people and work together as a collective. And in the process, they will also see your capacity and want to put you forward and also cling on you as a vehicle to see if she gets there, all of us, we are, because she can always pave the way for almost all of us. The trust to others, the love and the hatred of anything that seeks to undermine anyone, you must have all the energy directed to removing that obstacle. Even at this stage, we should be able to talk about why a student should be given more funds, because clearly they need that fund, they need to go to school, they have capacity, but resources and the historical background prevents them, and therefore we lose leadership that might have been best leaders in the world. And therefore, we will fight. Fees must fall, not in the sense of political connotations as you see today, but for me to say, start from early childhood development and do it free. Go to all the stages, doing it free and providing food and any other necessary need that is a hurdle up to the tertiary level and more, so that all of us can have equal access to education and therefore to see things differently and to actually see when others are being oppressed and get into that space and unlock and remove hurdles for others. If you start by yourself, it's going to be very difficult because we start the I can, yet you can't if you are not a collective and bringing everyone and your story, what you want to achieve, known by someone, because it has to be achieved by a many.
I think you put that so well when you said that people may have the capability, but if they lack the resources, they cannot realize their capability. Mrs. Kappe, in closing our discussion today, could you please use this opportunity as a platform to share a statement or a few words of hope which you'd like to pass on to women in Africa that are listening to us today?
Thank you very much, and especially those who have an opportunity to listen, those who have a break on their hard days and long days of working hard in order to have a plate of food. I would want to say, where you are is not the end of the world. And also, you can't suffer in isolation. Let us do everything to go back to school. Even if you are old, I said to you, I never had a doll nor a smolanyana ball to play with. There was nothing where I grew up. And your situation is not unique. You must stand up, find a way of moving forward. I know I've been to many African countries where early childhood development as well as a foundation phase is difficult to access. But despite that, let's join our hands. And those who are in areas where they can have resources, donation is the thing that brought South Africa up. There are countries, there are missionaries, there are many people who donated towards our education in terms of school, bursaries, who donated to our freedom fighters. As I ended up in Australia on the Australia Aid Abroad, that managed to give me masters, very expensive in healthcare services. That was a foreign country. So let us join hands with Africa, with the international world, and ensure we dedicate most of our time, help others find education, be skilled in order to assist them, and move and never undermine and dictate. Those people are brilliant. All they have not had is the access to be where we are. So let's ensure we open doors and not force them in, but actually work with them to go in. I appeal to everyone to recognize education is the vehicle, it's the thing that we must use in order to liberate all of us as women.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Kappe. That was a fantastic message. We really appreciate you taking your time out today for joining us.
Thank you very much for the opportunity. Thank you so much, and I wish your voice to be bigger and bigger, to reach everywhere so that people can have that clarion call to wake up and do things so as improve the world, as to improve the world.
Thank you, Mrs. Kappe. You have been listening to Womanity, Woman in Unity on Channel Africa, the voice of the African Renaissance, and we have been talking to Ms. Rosemary Zoleka Kappe, who is a Member of Parliament and currently serving as Chairperson of the Portfolio Committee on Social Development.